So we're going to start by having a story. We're going to have the story of Mr. Messy by Roger Hart. It's going to be slightly abridged version. So Mr. Messy was messy by name and messy by nature. He lived in a particularly messy looking house. There were tiles missing from the roof. The windows on his house were broken. The hinges on his gates were broken. And the flower beds were full of weeds. Had he cut the grass recently? He had not. One day, Mr. Messy went out for a walk through the woods, tripping up on a broom that he'd left in the garden. And he went for the walk because he felt like going for a walk. Here he is, happy on his walk. But on his walk, he saw the prettiest looking cottage that he had ever seen. And up from behind the hedge popped Mr. Neat and Mr. Tidy. Here they are. Mr. Neat and Mr. Tidy owned a cleaning business. And despite Mr. Messy not wanting their help, Mr. Tidy and Mr. Neat saw Mr. Messy and bundled him into the back of their van. Off they went back to his house to sort things out. They stopped outside his house. "What a mess," they both said. Mr. Neat made the garden look neater than it had ever been before. And Mr. Tidy made the inside of his house look tidier than it had ever looked before. But they hadn't finished there. They took Mr. Messy off to have a bath. And he didn't like the look of that at all. And in fact, they brushed and combed him until he didn't look like Mr. Messy at all. Mr. Messy and Mr. Tidy and Mr. Neat all chuckled together and said, "I'm going to have to change my name now. I'm not messy at all." The end.
Great. Great storytelling there, Mike. So just to start off, in pairs and in people next to you, share, who do you naturally identify with? Do you think you're naturally a Mr. Messy, or do you think you're naturally a Mr. or Mrs. Tidy / Neat? And then if we get time, also maybe identify, what do you think was good and right about that story? And what do you think maybe wasn't quite so right or good about that story? So 2 questions, 3 to 5 minutes.
What do we think was right about that story? What do we think was... I'm going to have to jump over with this microphone so we can get you on recorded.
Mr. Neat and Mr. Tidy helped Mr. Messy get neat.
So that you think that they're trying to help. Okay. Did him some good.
He was hurting himself. He did hurt himself. He was so messy that he was hurting himself. So
yes, he tripped over the broom, didn't he?
Yeah.
Anything else good come out of the story? What do we think was bad about the story? Anything that made you feel...
Mr. Neat and Mr. Tidy kidnapped him.
Yes, imposing their values.
He was lazy still. So Mr. Neat and Mr. Tidy basically forced him to tidy up out of his will and did it for him.
So do you think Mr. Messy would still be Mr. Messy and go back to being Mr. Messy?
Yes.
Or they changed him. Or they tried to change him.
Yeah, they tried to change him.
I think all the Mr. Men find their identity in the wrong places. Like Mr. Strong. Strong can't be your identity. Mr. Messy. It can't be tight. I am the tidy person. I'm the messy person. That can't be your chief identity. That's weird.
But is it last name?
Okay.
Yeah. Well done, guys. Well done. That was good. Move on.
Is it me next?
Yeah.
Okay. So we're going to think a little bit about kind of what some people call the sacred and secular divide. So we often think that things done at home are less godly than things that were done at church. We somehow think that, you know, welcoming people into church is more godly or more holy than welcoming people into our own homes just because of the place. We can somehow feel more important and therefore it's more valuable to God in that way. We can create a kind of sacred and secular divide in all sorts of things. For example, time, or kind of hanging out with Christians more godly than hanging out with non-Christians. We kind of fall into thinking like that. So prayer meetings, pleasing to God. Changing nappies, God is indifferent or slightly grossed out by it. Bible study, God honoring. Washing up dishes, God's got better things to do than to kind of be watching over that or thinking about that. It doesn't really matter to him, we sometimes think. But we do need to be reminded that Christian service takes place in the day-to-day of everyday lives. We can be holy and we can be set apart and distinctive in everything that we do. All sorts of things. We can be demonstrating the gospel every day, in the everyday things. So under the kind of Old Covenant, back in the Old Testament, there was very much a different kind of sacred and secular divide, where there was a whole system of kind of graduated holiness. There was kind of the Sabbath was holy, the temple was holy, the inner kind of Holy of Holies was kind of where only the holiest people could go. Only the priests who'd been properly cleaned could go there into the innermost part of the temple. But Jesus breaks down these barriers. So when Jesus died, the temple curtain, which kind of operated as a kind of separation between his people and himself, was torn in two. Jesus touched unclean people, and instead of becoming unclean himself, he made them clean. So kind of everything in Jesus is kind of not undone, but we need to think about it in a slightly different way. We can now worship God anywhere. And Jesus makes us clean and acceptable to God. We can rest in him and we can worship him anywhere. Now that Christ is at the Father's right hand, he has sent his Spirit to us to inspire us, to energize us, to motivate us, and kind of to do holy activity done for and in the presence of God. So that means that now our kitchen sink can be a holy place and not just the temple. We can give glory to God by singing praises and sharing in his delight in creation and serving others in love in any place. So there's no longer this kind of holy time, holy place, and secular kind of places. That's going to affect how we look at the everyday things like housework. Has anybody got anything, any questions about that, or anything that they want to say? That's kind of like a kind of where we're kind of going into this from. No?
Perfect.
Great.
So every area of our lives belong to Jesus, and therefore every area of our lives are a way that we can worship him and give him glory. But there's also nothing that sin doesn't corrupt and ruin. So we're going to spend the next 15 minutes getting you guys to do the hard work by thinking through this area of housework and cleaning. What is good about it? And how can we worship Jesus through it and bring him glory? But also, how has it been affected and how can it be corrupted by our sinful natures? So we're going to think that through and then feedback together. So the way we guys want you to do that is to get into four groups. And we did a head count, and there are 16 of you. So that means four groups of four. Thank you very much. I was proud of that. So if you can arrange yourselves into four groups of four. I shall come round with a passage and some questions to think through. Why can cleaning be good? How can cleaning be good? When can cleaning and housework be good? And when, why, and how can cleaning or housework be bad? Does that make sense? How long do we think we've got for that? Like 10, 15 minutes?
Yeah, 10, 15 minutes.
Yeah, and then we'll feedback.
So, in for 10.
Yeah, cool. I'm bringing them round, so don't worry, because they're all specific.
You get a feedback to each other. You've all got a different question, so no copying.
Do you think, does it matter who we give to what?
I don't think it matters. Okay, so hopefully you've nominated your spokesperson to feedback to us all. I'm gonna nominate this group to go first. What was your passage, and what were you talking about?
We had Genesis chapter 1 to Genesis chapter 2. And we were talking about why can cleaning be good? Have you all got that on your piece of paper? Oh, right, okay, good. I thought that was just the title. Why can cleaning be good? So Genesis 1:1-2, all the in the beginning, and God was there, and that sort of thing. Who are we? The question was, who are we emulating when we tidy? And the answer was God. if you didn't get that already,
how?
Because He is ordered. He makes ordered things out of chaos. And then moving on from that, Genesis 2, 8-9, about the Garden of Eden and how He put Adam in there. Why were Adam and Eve made to live in the garden and not a wilderness? And so we talked about it had all the things they needed. So it says in verse 9, the Lord God made all kinds of trees grow out of the ground, trees that were pleasing to the eye and good for food. So God had provided them with what they needed in the garden, and it was safe there. It worked. So if you're a good gardener, you'll know that your garden works properly because it
has order.
It has order, but it also it reproduces and it comes back again each year, and etc. That's why they were in a garden. And then Genesis 2, 19-20 is the bit where God brings the animals to Adam and says, name them, which must have been a very fun job for him. And the question was, why does Adam order and categorize the animal kingdom? And so we spoke about communication. So if Adam was just... we talked about how Adam had to make sure Noah knew the 2x2 was going to be correct. So that communication could work. But also, what else did we say? I think that was it, basically. Oh, was there? Yeah, I don't know. But also we then made a few extra notes, such as, birds bringing twigs from everywhere and putting them together in a nest and that sort of thing. And God creates things that have order and work together.
So I was sat with your group, and so you did speak about how God gave Adam the job to order. This group.
Apparently it's me. Don't worry, I won't remember what anyone said either.
Wait, can we just go back to this one?
Yeah.
So I've got a question. So, and it's another obvious question, but it's just going a bit deeper. This idea that cleaning and housework and tidying is good. So where does that sense of satisfaction come from when we put something away in its home? It's a really obvious question.
Anyone can answer that.
Yeah, anyone. Where does that come from? Why do we have that within us when it feels good and satisfying to put something in its home and there's tidy and there's order? yeah, we're made in the image of a God who is like this. This is his nature, and this is how he's created his world. And so there's something good and right about acting in that image and reflecting him in that. And so for all the Mr. Neats and the Mr. Tidies out there, there's something good and right about doing that. And then all the other things that you talked about, the idea of that, then your home can give you everything that it needs to, and it can be a provision to other people as well. We read in the story of Mr. Messi, he hurt himself. The garden was safe and a good place for Adam and Eve to dwell in, whereas a wilderness would have been unsafe. And so, yeah, there's something good and safe, but also pleasing about being neat and being tidy. And actually, that is how our God is. He's ordered, and he gave Adam the role to be ordered. So, yeah, tidying and cleaning and housework can be good for all those reasons, because God is like that, and God is good. So, cool. All right, we can...
Okay,
we can
actually, I'm not going to do your group next. I'm going to do that group, because your two groups are connected.
Yeah, go ahead.
So I'm going to do this group first.
Where do you want to start?
What was your passage?
Okay, we've got a few passages. Why can cleaning be bad? So Exodus 17:34, do not make any idols. Jonah 2:8, those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. And Hosea 8:4, they set up kings without my consent. They choose princes without my approval. With their silver and gold, they make idols for themselves to their own destruction. So the question, how can cleaning become an idol? We talked about that quite a lot, about how... not necessarily cleaning in itself being an idol, but the clean house being an idol, that it's... I've lost my thread.
I'm just trying to think. We were talking about an obsession. Cleaning can become an obsession, so you spend all your time... I introduced the story of Martha and Mary a little bit, an amount of time that one was spent in... preparing food. Sorry, I was another person.
I'll do your group next.
Shut up. I'm allowed to be. We were talking a little bit about Martha and Mary and how one was preparing food and the other was sat at Jesus' feet and teaching, and where the priority should be. And we weren't arguing against the idea of cleaning as being something that was good and proper. Talked a little bit about hygiene and the rights and wrongs of keeping a place in order, but the obsession side of it could be something that we could then find caused us into pride, that we became so obsessed with the house that we weren't welcoming to people that would come in. You've got to take your shoes off, you can't sit there, these sorts of things that can be against what God would want for us to do as Christians in our hospitality roles. Mm. Anything else, guys?
The second question? Yeah. Okay. Did you want to say something? Okay, so the other question was, how can the state of your house become an identity? And again, we were talking about kind of how people can be very prideful about having tidy houses, how it becomes something that kind of takes over, the whole life. Any other thoughts?
You were talking about how you were kind of giving up a false thing. Like we've got it.
Oh, yes, yeah.
So whenever everyone's coming around, you kind of have your house as if.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Now I can't think what to say. saying like that it's like a false thing that you can give off. You want people to see you as something that you possibly aren't, but just give an impression of yourself as a certain way. Mm. And that can become, part of your identity.
Yeah.
Okay, so that follows on to what this group had. The spokesperson has got a mouthful of soup and bread.
Hello. We were looking at the negative side of the positive negative side of cleaning. So we were looking at the Mary and Martha passage as well. And we were talking about the possible like underlying sins, like underneath that kind of need to be clean and to work and present alongside of yourself. So we thought about things like self-righteousness and pride and wanting to present yourself as
perfect,
better than you are. I don't want to say better because that suggests that if you're not clean, you're worse. Yeah, yes, like a Facebook profile. Just kind of give a really kind of just a veneer of something good. But yeah, we were looking at how relationships are affected by attitudes towards housework. So Martha looks down on her sister for sitting with Jesus and spending time with friends rather than cleaning the house and making it presentable. And Jesus tells her off for that, because building those relationships is a positive thing, like, especially with Jesus present, kind of take advantage of it. We looked at, yeah, I can't remember what we said about.
So your one is very linked to the one before, the idea that when our hearts make things that were given to us to be good, so that, to make order out of chaos is something good. But when we turn that into an idol and our hearts cling to it, it makes it very hard, doesn't it, to have the room and the space to be honest and genuine and love other people, doesn't it? And so you can see, you can kind of see a bit of that with Martha. She was so busy trying to create order and for things to be clean and right that it became increasingly difficult for her to love her sister, and you could say more importantly to spend time with Jesus. So the more our heart is filled up with these idols or a sense of where do I get my identity from, where do I find my significance and my satisfaction from, when our heart has to cling to those things, it makes it increasingly difficult to be generous in other areas, doesn't it? So whether we're naturally Mr. Messies or Mr. Neats, it becomes harder to be generous and, a bit more like laid back in those areas. Yeah.
Yeah, we're also talking about the idea of fairness in the kind of division of labour as well. I was talking about how I do much less of the housework than Ruth does, because she's about the house more often than I am. So she does the lion's share of the housework. But I feel sometimes that I get left with the kind of gross jobs to do, like cleaning out the sink or kind of tackling a really horrible bit of washing up or something like that. And I start to kind of feel resentment towards that.
Because you feel a bit like a martyr.
Yeah.
I did this.
Yeah, I know. Pretty mean to work. but that's kind of like a self-righteousness thing, and I don't see the opportunity to serve Ruth by cleaning out the sink. But it's a chore that I kind of have to do. Because it's there, so.
And Jesus didn't care that much about fair, like, either. You know, he came as a servant, so.
Yeah.
But we all feel that, don't we? It's not fair.
And on that point of service and being a servant, let's go over to our last group.
So our passage was John 13, 1 to 17. Which is the passage where Jesus serves his disciples by washing their feet. And so I guess our overarching point was that that Jesus didn't come to be served, but to serve many. And we can do the same through our housework. And that that sort of shows our attitude to our friends or the people we live with, and even our friends and family who we invite to our house. So it's really about caring and serving the people we live with. I think that was our overarching point. What else did we talk about? Talked about your marriage a bit, didn't we?
I think we talked about just how it's thinking about the other, preferring the other person's kind of needs or wants. So maybe it's not so much about how cleaning can be good, but maybe you a bit too over the top with how tidy and neat you like things, and is preferring the other person's want to like not to have to be stressed with that. But then vice versa, the other person preferring their need for it to be neat and tidy. It's getting that balance, but you can serve the other person through doing those things, or not, maybe.
Yeah, which brings us on to Annie's point about it's going to model the gospel.
Yeah. So we're just going to think for a few minutes about how this area of cleaning and tidying is a picture of the gospel. But also, actually, when I was doing some research on this, I think I was really convicted that it's a really great situation to apply gospel truths to it. So actually, the idea of being clean or being made clean is one that runs right through the Bible, doesn't it? We're told as sinners we stand dirty, we're marred, we're stained by our sins. But God promises to clean us of those things. So in Ezekiel, we're told that God will sprinkle clean water on us and that we will be clean. He says, I will cleanse you from your impurities and from all your idols. We also have that powerful imagery in Isaiah, don't we, where it talks about our sins being like blood that stains. And if we've ever tried to get blood out of something, we know that it really stains. Yet God cleanses and washes us white as snow. So I don't think it's a tenuous link to be thinking about these things when we approach housework and tidying, and especially cleaning. We can marvel at wonder at what God has done for us. That without Him, we stand condemned by our dirt and the things that we can't wash by ourselves. I think when we're washing the dishes, why can't we wonder afresh at how we are washed, and that can be a sense, a source of joy. But taking that further, I think the gospel also really applies directly to this area of housework and cleaning. As we probably find, cleaning and housework is continuous, and it never stops. You do it one day, or you do it once a week, and it needs to be done the next week. So there's this idea of things that we have to do continuously, and I think gospel truths that we need to apply continuously to this area of our life. So there may be one week where I remember to do all the jobs I meant to do. My housemates are sitting here, so maybe you probably can't think of one of these weeks, but it's hypothetical. There's a hypothetical week where I remember to do all my jobs, and I'm really kind and thoughtful, and I go completely out of my way to be helpful to others. But there'll still be something I'll forget because I'm not perfect, and that's okay. We know we're not perfect, so it would be foolish to presume that in this area of our life we could ever be perfect. So it's accepting our weakness, it's accepting our humanity, isn't it? And it's being humble, it's not being proud, it's admitting our mistakes and continuously seeking forgiveness. But equally, we can find ourselves on the other side of that hypothetical situation when we get let down, when somebody else hasn't maybe left enough time to do all the things that they're meant to do, and we have to do that job again. And I think housework is one area in our lives where we can apply the forgiveness that is ours through Jesus Christ to the people around us. So we've kind of been thinking in the home, but it's also at church as well, isn't it? Sometimes we might think we have that martyr mentality. It's me again. Why is it always me? Yet God continuously and unconditionally forgives us. And we're told to love like God does, aren't we? And so in 1 Corinthians 13, that includes keeping no record of wrongs. And I was really struck. Actually, I think this is quite a hard thing to do when it comes to housework and chores and things like that. We can so easily fall into kind of keeping a score, or keeping a record of what one person has done, what one person hasn't done. And so applying this gospel truth of the fact that we have unconditional forgiveness, how are we showing that to people in our lives, showing unconditional forgiveness when we kind of feel a little bit let down? So if you're anything like me, housework can sometimes feel a bit like that scoreboard. If I've done a lot, if I've done what I feel it is enough, I feel really good and I feel really proud about myself. But more often than not, in my case, I feel like I haven't done enough, so I feel a bit rubbish about myself, as if our relationships are dependent and are contingent on our performances. But we know that's just not true, isn't it? We know it's not true with our relationship with God. It's not based on a performance, anything we could do. It's purely based on what Jesus has done for us. And we also now try and emulate that with our relationships and friendships around us, don't we? That it's not dependent on anything. It's not dependent on a performance or an act or keeping up an appearance. And it's not dependent on how they feel towards us. So I think cleaning and is a great picture of the gospel that we can hold close to our hearts and we can find a joy in. And I also think it's a challenging but a great area that we can try and apply some of these gospel truths to, because I think this is the truth that we're told, isn't it? And these are great things that we know to be true, but our relationship with God. So let's try and emulate them and put them into practice in this area of our lives as well.
So has anyone got any top tips of how we can apply the gospel to the area of housework? Has anyone got any top tips where we can, anyone who's thought about this before or kind of just got more experience of cleaning than us two people
at
the front?
We're all, we were also aware that we're coming at it from one perspective. So I still live in a shared house. Mike is married, lives with his wife, but you know, I wonder what it's like with children involved as well. Does that change the dynamic of how we try and glorify God in housework and also apply gospel truths to this area? That can be hypothetical as well as.
Anybody got any wisdom to share? Matthew.
Not any of the things you just said, of like, yeah, not top tips on cleaning, but just interesting. So I switched groups halfway through. I'm a traitor, sorry. But so Cheryl, it's so interesting you saying that your tidying is very opposite to your parents' tidying, kind of as a reaction almost, and the same for... Well, my wife as well, her tidying and her parents' tidying are kind of opposite. So it's interesting that just that reactive nature there. So it's not just that we learn, but if we've been annoyed by the way someone keeps their house, whether it's tidy or untidy, then got to think about whether these reactions are good. Just trying to think about that for myself, my own parents. Yeah. For me, that would probably just be overly dependent on mother. But like, yeah.
I have a question.
Okay. Oh no.
Sorry. So the world was made in an order, and so we're kind of blueprinted to want things to be tidy, mm-hmm. because God's made us like that. But we're also told not to be anxious about things. Mm. But when you've got a sideboard covered in dirty plates, and there's no bowls in the cupboard, and there's no glasses to drink anything from, and stuff, is it not natural to feel anxious at that point?
Oh, that is a good question.
Should I feel anxious about having a dirty house?
I think that there should be a feeling of this needs doing, or this needs to be kind of ordered, which is right. Should that be a great cause of anxiety? I don't think so, because it, on the scheme of things, it's not really particularly that kind of high up. It's not something that kind of, yeah, I don't think it's going to cause that.
Because I don't think anxiety. God was anxious before he created the world. So there's the idea of there's finding good in our behaviours, because we're made in his image. I think the line when that falls into sinful desires, it's a very small line. So it's hard to find. I think it'd be why are you anxious?
Do we believe that we don't have time to do it?
I think so. If you were to have time to make order out of that situation, like that is a good thing, and we can say it's good because it's how God made his universe to be. But if we're anxious to do that, just why are you anxious? What do you think is going to happen if you don't do it? Are you worried about people's opinions about it? Are you worried that it's causing like your housemate or your wife to be upset in her environment? Well, that would be a nice thing to do, wouldn't it? So that's, I think, I'd just ask why the anxiety, but yeah. Does that answer your question? So it's heart, it's like heart attitudes, isn't it? And like your intentions. And so if it's loving God and loving others before your own desires, then I think that's okay. So don't get too caught up in this group in the corner. It's more reinforcing the good behaviours rather than using that as a mandate, if you like, to sanction all of our behaviours. It's just reinforcing something that even the messy of us do have. There's something satisfying about finding order.
I think as well to be, it's a great way to live out the gospel in our lives to particularly if we live with other people, to clean and to tidy even when it's hard to do so, and to do it like some of these groups we're talking about, without any kind of, there's no scoring system, like mm-hmm. you said. So it's not like I've done the washing up for, I haven't, by the way, done the washing up for like a month every single day, and it's always an absolute tip. It's your turn now. No, I should go, okay, I'm going to do another month if needs be. I'm going to do another month and another month, because Jesus went completely out of his way, and he went to the very length of his life to give it up for us. And it's a wonderful way in which we can be a picture of that, is it not? You see what I mean?
Mm. Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And we shouldn't worry about it, Andrew, by the way. Mm-hmm. Just like we shouldn't worry about getting to work on time, but we should still get to work on time.
There is a point in which you might want to ask kind of the person who you're kind of serving, would you mind doing this before you get to the point of getting, I always do this. So, there is a kind of point where you kind of might ask for somebody's help. Any other top tips?
I was just wondering about priorities and how much we should prioritise cleaning, because obviously I'm a mother and, you know, my opinions have always been that it's better for me to spend time with my kids, playing with my kids, rather than tidying up. But then that leads to a very untidy house. So I wondered what your thoughts were.
I guess my immediate reaction would be, turn tidying into a game with your kids, and you can all do it together. Although that might not work. You need gullible kids to be able to do that with, maybe. I would say that it doesn't need to be, you need to love and serve others. So if that means loving your children by playing with them, great. If that means that you know, I don't know, if somebody's coming that might, not that you kind of, so let me, I don't want to be heard this wrong here. So I don't want you to kind of fear people over God. So if you're going to run around and tidy everything because this one person is coming, is that a fear of people more than a fear of God? Or is that just loving to want to kind of make things ordered for that person who's coming to visit? So you kind of have to weigh those two things up.
Just with that, it would be probably loving to your and serving your kids by including them in their cleaning. And it's a discipline they need to learn. And that is still spending time with your kids. Okay, you might not be playing Monopoly or whatever, but that's, I'd say, just as important, if not more important. So, Asher.
It would be great if we could pray these things through. So just for 1 minute, would you mind turning into your groups and praying that we would live out the gospel in this area of our lives? That would be fantastic.